We're talking today with Ethan Lane. Ethan, of course, head of the D.C. office for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Ethan, let's talk a little bit about a bunch of stuff going on, obviously, as you get to this summer cattle industry business meeting. So there'll be no shortage of topics within the committees and hallways. Even with mask on, you'll be able to have quite a set of conversations before it's all said and done. Maybe top of mind, or top of the list of some of the things going on, is the CFAP, perhaps additional monies with the stimulus being talked about right now. It looks like that we are going to have another stimulus package coming out of the agreement with the White House and the Senate, depending on how they can deal with Ms. Pelosi in the House. It is coming.
It does certainly sound like we are going to see some more funding for that program in some form. The details are going to be released this afternoon. They might be released already. But essentially, we're looking at probably another $20 billion in support for agriculture. Whether all of that goes to CFAP, whether that's a direct appropriation to the secretary, like the $9.5 billion that we saw in the first round, whether that's new funding for the Commodity Credit Corporation, those are the details that we're going to need to probably spend a little more time to see how Congress wants to proceed. Right. You know, we know there are some items in the original CFAP that we'd like to see addressed. In particular, that April 15th cutoff date is something that I think a lot of producers around the country were not pleased with. We were not pleased with it either. It's an arbitrary date. It was right in the middle of the pandemic's peak, the worst of the spread and the worst of the impact our producers were feeling. And the guys that sold cattle on April 16th took just as big a beating as the guys that sold them on the 14th. So we're going to be really keenly engaged in that particular piece of this. You know, we know they've spent just a shade over $6 billion of that money so far from the initial $16 billion. So we're going to be looking at where that money has made it out to the country. You know, one of our concerns off the bat was that they tightened down those restrictions too low. The payment limitations and those dates kept too many producers who were seriously impacted from getting the kind of money that they should have out of that program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we see them expand in more commodities, as we see them add some more money to this program, we're going to be keenly focused on the specifics of how they make sure that money gets out to where it needs to be.
I guess what the secretary fairly early on, as he explained the various pots of money he was operating out of, said that he just wanted to make sure he didn't run out of that CFAP money.
I think they've succeeded in that. You know, there's always that question still lingering of that the final 20%. You know, producers got 80% of their money. And they're expecting that 20% payment. And what they've been told is, we'll get you your 20% if we have it. Well, from my perspective, it looks like they have it. Mm-hmm. So let's make sure that those guys are given their full check that they were expecting from this program. And then let's make sure that those inventory payment recipients, those Part 2 recipients, are plussed up in that process. That's a lot of our stockers and backgrounders and cow-calf guys that are marketing cattle later in the year. A lot of them made marketing decisions at the height of the pandemic based on those adverse market conditions, based on those low prices mm-hmm. That we were seeing at the sale barn. And a lot of them probably were kept out of a more substantial payment because of that. So we need to make sure that that's being addressed. We need to make sure that when Congress sends this to USDA in whatever form they do, they send it with instructions. You know, this is what we want you to do with this money. This is how we want you to address this issue.
So that's a conversation that you're still having, I guess, even as we speak, when it comes to members of Congress.
Well, you know, remember back in May, the House passed the HEROES Act, $3 trillion package. This is the Republican response to that, essentially. This is the package that the White House and the Senate GOP brokered as a response to Nancy Pelosi's package. Now, we liked the ag title in the HEROES Act. It provided an extra $16 billion to CFAP. The problem is they passed that the same week that the CFAP program was released. And the language essentially in the HEROES Act would have put that money right into CFAP. Well, CFAP, as it currently exists, has that April 15th cutoff that does not work for our guys. So we're going to need to see some changes there to make sure this is done correctly. Mm-hmm. But you know, there is, I think, broad support for the idea that we need to get more resources out to agriculture. And that's a good place to be in this conversation. A lot of the fighting on this bill isn't going to be on our stuff. It's going to be on other things that aren't related to us. It's going to be on those direct payments to Americans throughout the country based on income levels, you know, those $1,200 checks, the $600 unemployment checks. There's a lot of that work that really is beyond our scope, but we need to make sure we're playing into that in a way that our producers get what they need out of it.
Make sure that agriculture doesn't get left behind.
That's right. And that's always the battle we're fighting in Washington to make sure that we're at the table.
Now, you mentioned obviously that kind of the height of the pandemic, the whole thing that was going on, has affected the cattle market. That was part of the investigation, the report that came out just a few days ago from USDA, look at the Holcomb fire of last year, and as well as COVID-19. Your thoughts about what USDA said and maybe what they didn't say?
Well, so we were right after the Holcomb fire, one of the first to request that USDA investigate those market conditions after the Holcomb fire. We then echoed that request again during COVID because we saw those same market dynamics at play. We saw that big spread. The report is interesting because it shows that at the height of the Holcomb fire, there was after that fire, the spread was $67. At the height of COVID, it was $323. So, I mean, the COVID spread just dwarfs what we saw in the Holcomb fire.
Right.
But it's the same underlying dynamics, right? It's this price discovery conversation that has dominated our industry for months now, and rightfully so. I mean, it is the issue on everyone's mind is how do we make sure we're getting adequate price discovery? How do we make sure that our producers are getting what they should, what they deserve for the product that they're producing? You know, as it goes into that value chain, it hits that wall of processing capacity that is what it is. We're looking for ways to expand that processing capacity. And then, you know, the commodity that comes out the other side, that boxed beef, I mean, we've seen wild fluctuations in those numbers. So we've really focused on how do we make sure that our producers are getting what they deserve from that process. And that comes down to leverage and price discovery. We're expecting to have a lot of conversation about that this week. You know, our live cattle marketing working group has been meeting weekly for months now. And the participants in those calls represent everything from the 5014 Grassley bill proponents, the originators of that bill, all the way to the opponents of that that would like to see the government stay as far out of this as possible, and everybody in between. And they are between all of our states around the country. I guarantee you, whatever your perspective is, there's a state that shares it. And that, as messy as it can be, is the real that's the real grassroots process, right? And what we saw from USDA and some of their recommendations about the need for that data to be more regional, to be focused on price discovery needs on a regional basis because you have such different needs. Dr. Stephen Koons from Colorado State has done a lot of research on this. It shows that in Iowa where they're doing 50% of their 49% of their transactions are cash negotiated. In Texas, that's like 5%. And there's a big delta there, but Texas is a big market mover. So how do we get more cash trade in those areas and negotiated trade when we have producers that are engaging in these alternative marketing arrangements because they're doing well for them? Mm-hmm. You know, those are all informed by negotiated trade. So we have to have one for the other to be successful. And that's the conversation that we're going to be continuing to have. That's clearly where USDA came in their kind of, I guess, let's call them preliminary conclusions in this report. You know, they were clear in this report that they're not done. They noted that the DOJ investigation is ongoing. We know that's true. We know DOJ's been out on the ground, talking to market participants. We know that Packers and Stockyards has said they are going to continue to look into this as well. So I think what we saw in that report was kind of here's where we are right now. Here's all the market and the economic conditions that surrounded both of these issues, which I thought was really helpful to get a real economics report on this entire situation. It's 10 pages of the kind of hellacious environment we've been in for the last year,
right?
With some conclusions of, hey, this is what we are seeing from the USDA side of how we might be able to make this process better. And we're seeing some of the same ideas floating around our working group and up for discussion. So I guess that means a lot of us are all kind of coming to some of the same conclusions.
I guess what the key for this week, try to come out with some level of policy certainty for this particular point in time.
Oh, absolutely. I think, look, this is, this is the only place where we're going to have market participants and state affiliates from all different ends of the spectrum deciding together what we want out of this process. And that's going to be really valuable for Capitol Hill as they start to look into this. You know, livestock mandatory reporting is up for reauthorization at the end of September. That is an incredibly important tool to make sure that we've got the data out there to send the right market signals that people need. So this is a conversation that nobody gets a pass on. I mean, we're gonna need to figure out as an industry what we want out of this, and hopefully that's just what we're going to do this week.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other things that went on. In and around COVID, we've had a whole host of bills dropped into the hopper. Some you already made reference to a couple of them that are out there. But it seems like a lot of folks have got a lot of ideas on particularly how to address some of our meat processing problems.
Yep. There are more bills than I think I've lost track of all the different processing bills that are out there.
They all got an acronym too.
They all have an acronym, and we, you know, a couple of them are bills that we've worked on. And they all are getting at this same problem, right? Of how do we make sure there is enough capacity out there? How do we make sure that it's in the right places? You know, we have a lot of state inspected facilities that are looking for the ability to expand their range. There are some processes in place at USDA. That allow for them to mirror that federal process that will allow them to sell across state lines. 27 states have the infrastructure to play in that arena, but only 7 are taking advantage of it. That tells us that there are some changes needed to make that program work the way that it should. We're hearing from some of these state departments of agriculture that there are some barriers to getting into that federal system that just don't work for them.
Right.
So we're looking for whatever opportunities we can. We're working with Congress. We're working with some of those states to figure out what that combination of things is. Is it grant funding to some of those facilities? The Ramp Up Act is one that has broad bipartisan support from former chairs. Frank Lucas is on that bill,
right.
And others. Colin Peterson, you know, are there some ways like that we can get some funding in place for those smaller plants to get the pieces in place that they need to increase their capacity? Are there some other areas where we need to be looking at online sales? The Direct Act allows for those state inspected plants to sell across state lines. If it's via the internet, if it's via an online sale, because that gives you the trace back that's concerning otherwise when you have that internet record. So there are some innovative things happening, trying to find some ways to expand that processing capacity.
How do we get those across the finish line?
Well, I mean, that's the operative question, right? With anything, I say this a lot, and it's probably more applicable now than in any time I've been in Washington. The most valuable commodity in Washington is Senate floor time. And as we see this Congress wrap up, as we see the coronavirus come back, you know, roaring back in some areas of the country, D.C. just put a quarantine order in place preventing members from Congress regular people, members of Congress can be exempt from that, from traveling to the district without quarantining for 14 days. They are facing a big set of hurdles to just get regular business done. And they lost most of the spring. You know, they didn't get that work done in the spring that normally they would. So it is a big question of how do we get all this done by election day or in that lame duck session that follows. And, you know, there's no telling what that's going to look like based on the results we get from the election. So we're going to keep our foot on the gas. We know they're going to be working hard through this week, and then they'll most likely take an August recess. After which they'll come back and it'll be a sprint.
Finally, something that's out there that I know you're watching closely is this move by another group to call for a referendum on the dollar head beef checkoff. They're gathering signatures. Interesting, USDA in setting what they were calling the rules, I guess, of the game for this thing, they say they could have electronic signatures. How did that happen? I mean, how did USDA come to that conclusion?
You know, I wasn't involved in their conversation of how they came to that conclusion. But, you know, certainly, I mean, it's a producer-driven program. So, I mean, the producer's right to weigh in on that and voice their opinion is incredibly important. We just want to make sure sure that that process is done in an orderly way. And, you know, if you're signing a petition in person and you're doing that, that's one way. If it's online, that opens it up for the need to make sure that that's being verified. And I believe they're working through the different tools to make sure that that verification happens. And that's going to be an important part of that, so that they make sure that the signatures that are on there are legitimate and from producers that have engaged in the business of selling cattle over the, you know, the year that, that they voted. So, you know, that it sounds like they're working through those issues now to make sure that they are able to monitor that process and I perform the way producers around the country expect them to. So we'll just see how that plays out.
Finally, you know, you mentioned the fact that we're in a really a wild time right now. We are coming very quickly down to the election season. We're really already in it in a lot of ways, but this is a huge election this year, obviously, with the president, all members of the House, a third of the Senate. Boy, there's a lot of things that are up in the air right now.
There really are. And, you know, we haven't shaken this problem we have in American politics, which is we don't know how to poll. Everybody has cell phones. You know, there's no real accurate polling, and we've seen that in the last couple of elections. Well, that really makes it difficult for these elected officials to figure out where they need to be. You know, hopefully they're talking to their constituents, they're engaged in that dialogue, and they've got a good sense of where their districts are. But, you know, the president's coattails are proven to be pretty durable in some parts of the country where he's made endorsements in some of these special elections over the last few weeks. Those endorsements carried the day. The Alabama Senate primary, Tommy Tuberville beating Jeff Sessions. I mean, that speaks volumes down there. That was Jeff Sessions' seat for a long time. We saw the Texas 13th District, Josh Weingarner and Ronnie Jackson was another tough race where the president waded in. You know, it speaks to the fact that he has a lot of supporters out there that are still very much on the team. Mm-hmm. The question is, can that hold up in some of these suburban areas, some of these more moderate districts where we lost seats on the Republican side in the last election? And that's going to be the big question.